We're going to learn a talk by the Rebbe. This is from 1981, where the Rebbe, he's going to explain to us, basically, a midrash, a writing of our sages, that it's kind of puzzling. It doesn't really, it's not so easy to understand what the midrash is talking about. And within that explanation, the Rebbe is going to bring three perspectives of the ancient nations, non-Jews nations, how they saw godliness, their relationship with godliness. And in the Rebbe is going to explain how these three perspectives are actually three types of creatures in the world. And with that idea, the Rebbe is going to explain the Midrash. That's what's going to happen. This Midrash is about a plague that God gave the Egyptians, the plague of Tzfardea, of frogs, the plague of frogs. So let's learn inside. I'm just going to read the English and here and there some words. The original actually is in Yiddish. It's a very interesting sicha. Not difficult, it's just one paragraph that it's kind of tough, difficult to understand how the Rebbe is ordering the paragraph. But the rest is not so complicated. So let's go. The Torah says that God told Moshe Rabbeinu, go to Pharaoh and tell him that you're going to bring plagues on him, and this particular plague is frogs, Tzfardea. When the Midrash explains this phrase of God to Moshe, go tell Pharaoh that you're going to bring Tzfardea, frogs, and so on, the Midrash says like this. It's a verse in Koheles. I think it's called Ecclesiastes or something like that. The verse says, "The Yisron Eretz Bakoilhi." The virtue of the land is on everything. Like anything that is around the world has some virtue, something good about it, something that God, some reason why God created it. And the Midrash brings the opinion of Rav Acha b'Rav Hanina. The Rebbe is going to go back and forth with this rabbi all throughout all the sicha, all the rest of the talk. Rav Acha b'Rav Hanina says like this: even things that you see and they are like meyutarim, like something, things that you don't really need, there's no reason why they should exist in the world, like for instance serpents and scorpions, even those things, they are part of the creation of the world. And, continues Rav Acha, saying, God told the prophets, what do you think, that if you don't go in my missions, if you're not my emissaries, do you think I don't have any other emissaries? I have a full earth, full of things that could be my emissaries. I will make my emissaries even serpents, even scorpions, and even frogs. That's where the Midrash is connected to this idea of the plague of frogs. You should know that if it wouldn't be for the tzira, tzira was some kind of insect that stood from the other side of the Yarden of the Jordan River and brought diseases and problems to the people living in the land of Canaan before the Jewish people actually entered the land of Canaan. So again, you should know, continues Rav Acha saying, that if it wouldn't be for this tzira, this insect, how would God actually punish the Emorim, the people of the land of Canaan? And if it wouldn't be for frogs, how would God punish Pharaoh and the Egyptians? That's why it's written in Parshas Va'era that God brought frogs and so on. So we see from Rav Acha that there's something, some connection between Pharaoh and frogs. And apparently the only way of punishing Pharaoh is through frogs, which is, sounds weird. Actually, and the Rebbe is going to say, there were other plagues, not just frogs. There were other nine plagues. So what's this idea that the only way of actually punishing Pharaoh is through frogs? And even if we're going to think that frogs are completely useless in the world, they were created to punish Pharaoh. Why? Okay. We have to understand, this is what actually the Rebbe says, we have to understand, how can we say if it wouldn't be for the frogs, there would be no way to punish the Egyptians? Frog is just one of the 10 plagues. If you want to justify this insect called Tzira, whatever it was, that it used to throw some diseases on the Canaanim, on the people of the land of Canaan, and so on. Okay, because that was the first activity through which God punished these people in the land of Canaan. Okay, so you can tell me the first one is the most important one, the hardest one. Okay, I can get it. I can get it. The strongest one, to the point that it was so strong, to the point that, again, our sages say that the tzira, whatever the whatever thing it was, did not go through the Jordan River, the Jordan. It just stood from the other side and threw whatever it threw. Okay, I can get that. So again, there are two ideas that this Rav Acha brought: the God punishing the people of the land of Canaan through tzira, whatever it was, and God punishing Pharaoh with frogs. So the Canaanim, I get it, I understand it. They were punished, and this creature was created just to punish them. Okay, I got it. But frogs, wait a second, it was not the first plague. The first plague was blood, whatever it meant. And it was a very hard plague. There was no water to drink. So people were really in distress. Frogs wasn't such a terrible thing in comparison to not having water. So frog is not such a terrible thing. And furthermore, the water of the Nile River, which was converted to blood and so on, that was the main point, main place of sustenance, of livelihood for the whole land of Egypt. And there were other plagues. And also, taking into account the last plague, the death of the firstborns, was a terrible thing. Pharaoh himself was a firstborn. So frogs doesn't sound so terrible. Blood was more terrible than this. And the last one, oy vey. That was terrible, really terrible. So why does Rav Acha say in the Midrash that if it wouldn't be for the frogs, there would be no way of punishing Pharaoh? Why? Doesn't sound so correct. And also, the whole thing, it's not easy to understand. How can we at all say that God says, if it wouldn't be for the frog, I wouldn't be able to punish Mitzrayim, punish the Egyptians? What do you mean? God can do anything he wants, in any way he wants. So I need the frogs. What do you mean you need the frogs? You don't need the frogs. Okay, that's chapter number one. We brought Rav Acha and two questions basically on Rav Acha, on the idea that Rav Acha brings. Second chapter. Before this idea of Rav Acha in the Midrash brings another idea. Our sages say, on the same verse of Koheles, that there's a virtue in the land for anything that appears in the land. There's a virtue that everything has a reason why it exists. Even our sages say like this, Rabbi Seinu, our sages, we don't know their name, but it's whatever, our sages, they say, even things that you see and think are useless, they're not. Like, for instance, parushim, itushim, like little mosquitoes and those kinds of insects, they are part of the creation of the world. This is what our sages say. And then Rav Acha comes and says, no, basically the same thing. They sound the same. In the way that we learn in a very simple reading, the difference between what Rabbi Seinu say, what our sages say, and what Rav Acha says, is that we're talking about two details over here. First of all, they say that there are things that look useless, and then Rav Acha comes up and says, wait a second, God not only creates things that you might think are useless, God uses them as their emissaries. So Rav Acha is adding up something that our sages didn't say, this idea of emissaries. And in this main thing of things that look useless, but they're not, our sages give a certain example, and Rav Acha gives another example, like different types of animals. They don't talk about the same animals. Our sages talk about some kinds of insects. In Hebrew, it's vuvim, parushim, itushim. It's like insects, like mosquitoes and all those kinds of insects. And Rav Acha talks about snakes, and then he talks about scorpions and frogs. So they use different examples of things that you might think are useless, but they're not. And then again, Rav Acha brings another point. There are emissaries. God uses them as emissaries. Now, in general, when we say that something is part of the creation of the world, that means to say that they were created by God, and they did not create themselves. Parenthesis is not on the Sikh of the Rebbe, but there are scientific opinions today that think that the world just came from nothing and poof, suddenly started being. There are such, and I'm not talking about stupid scientists, I'm talking about very smart people, that's what they think. Just spontaneous creation, out of nothing, out of just because, whatever. There are people that think like this, and very smart scientists that think like this. We, in Judaism, we don't think like this, but whatever, there are people thinking like this. So again, when both Rabbi Yisenu, our sages, and Rav Acha bring in the Midrash that something is part of the creation of the world, that means that God created it. It did not become existent by itself. And we want to say also in this phrase of something is part of the creation is included that it does have some usefulness. We might not know what, but for certainly has some use. We will see this later also. And in this, our sages, Rabbi Yisenu, bring again the example of some insects, zevuvim, parushim, mitushim, mosquitoes, whatever, that don't really look as necessary things in the world, but they say that they actually have a need. And they're part of what our sages say in a different place, anything that God created in his world, he did not create anything in vain. Some reason for being they have. We might not know what, but there's some reason. Okay. And on this, again, Rav Acha is saying there are different types of things that actually are part of the creation, and those things actually cause damage. One thing is to say, a mosquito, okay, you don't like mosquitoes, I don't know why the mosquitoes are here, I don't get it. Okay, no problem, but the mosquitoes are not really a terrible thing. But snakes, scorpions, they kill people. Okay, so Rav Acha is giving here a bigger novelty, so to speak, a bolder phrase. No, even snakes and even scorpions, they also have a reason of being. They also have a reason why God created them. And furthermore, Rav Acha even adds, God takes them as emissaries. Those things that cause damage, they're emissaries of God. Okay, so now we understand a very superficial discussion, argument between our sages and Rav Acha. Rav Acha is giving a very, very further, so to speak, idea. Even things that cause damage, they also have a reason of being, and God uses them as their emissaries. In which sense? But the Rebbe brings that God punishes the wicked people through these quote-unquote emissaries. A snake bites and whatever. So the guy passed away. The guy is dead. Okay, he was an evil person. So God punished this guy through these emissaries. According to these, we have to understand, since the main novelty of Rav Acha is that these animals that cause damage, are part of the creation of the world, and that God also has these animals as emissaries, why is it that Rav Acha adds frogs? I don't get it. Because Rav Acha actually brings three animals, snakes, scorpions, and frogs. Okay, I got it. Snakes and scorpions kill people. They're terrible, and God uses them as emissaries to kill the wicked people. Okay, I got it. And frogs, they're completely, they don't do anything. They just do nothing. There's no reason why you might think they're damaging. It doesn't look like they damage anything. At least not as snakes and scorpions, for sure. That's question number one. We don't get the least of Rav Acha. Rav Acha brings a weird list. We don't get it. Three animals, two make sense, and the third one doesn't make sense, to the point that Rav Acha says, even frogs, like given a great novelty, even frogs, I will teach you. What do you mean, even frogs? I don't get the even the frogs. What do you mean, even the frogs? They don't damage anything. And the third question that Rav brings out, the proof that Rav Acha brings, you should know, again, the tzira, this animal that, caused damage on the people of the land of Canaan, and there's no proof regarding the snakes and the scorpions. Navaja doesn't say anything. He just brings a proof regarding regarding the tzira. So we don't get it. He brought a list of three animals: snakes, scorpions, and frogs. And you should know, I'll bring you a proof. Tzira. What do you mean tzira? You didn't mention tzira. So what are you saying? And then he talks about the frogs. But what happened with the snakes and the scorpions? Rav Acha doesn't mention that anymore. Bring me some kind of proof that even that has some reason of being. Rav Acha doesn't say anything. And then the Rebbe brings another question. He's going to answer everything later. The Rebbe says, very simple question. What is this thing that Rav Acha is mentioning about the prophets? God is talking to the prophets, saying, hey, what do you think? I need you as my emissaries. I have many emissaries, and even the frogs are emissaries. What's this conversation with the prophets? What happened over there with the prophets? Suddenly, Rav Acha starts talking about prophets. Why? Why? Furthermore, the prophets, what's the idea of a prophet? The word prophet in Hebrew is Navi. Nevi'im is prophets. In plural, prophet is Navi. And that comes from Niv Sfasaim, like the movement of the lips. The whole idea of a prophet is that he talks in the name of God, like a true prophet, whatever, talks in the name of God. That's the whole point. So God is telling, in the words of Rav Acha, to the prophets, if you don't go as my emissaries, so I'll do my work with the snakes and the scorpions, even the frogs. What's the connection? Like the prophets talk. That's why they're the prophet. And the frog doesn't talk. So what's the connection over here? It's difficult to understand. Okay, that was chapter number 2. The Rebbe basically posing a few questions on the Midrash. The explanation for this, we could say that the whole thing of the plagues upon Pharaoh and the Egyptians, it was not to just like that, punish them. That was not the point. Because the Torah says clearly, Mitzrayim will know that I'm God. So if you want to punish somebody, you just punish and that's it. You want to kill him, just kill him and that's it. He's not going to know anything because you killed him. That's it. But if you want to be known, there's something else you have to do that is not related to a punishment, and this person will know. And the Torah says a few times, "Ve'yodu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem," the Egyptians will know I'm God. But that's not it's not just a punishment. That, in other words, there will be a revelation of godliness, of a level of godliness that the Egyptians, for some reason, do not know and do not understand and so on. That's the reason why God brought the 10 plagues. So God will be known. That's the whole point. And there's a very long and very interesting explanation of the Abarbanel. He lived in Spain in the 1400s, where he explains each one of the plagues, what's the connection to knowing God. Which aspect of God becomes known through which plague. It's very interesting explanation. He writes a lot. Very long writings. Okay, so the point over here is that, again, God wants to be known in Egypt. The whole point of the plagues was to be known, actually, and to break the stiffness, so to speak, of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, but not to kill them, not to punish them. Now, since the klipa, the impurity of Pharaoh and the Egyptians, is different than other impurities, therefore, their knowing God had to come from frogs. So, the Rebbe is going to explain, of course, he's just presenting the idea. But the point of the explanation is, look, I know you don't understand the list of animals that Rav Acha brings. But Rav Acha is bringing a huge novelty by mentioning frogs. And that's what actually Pharaoh needed. Frogs. And from the frogs, he learned a tremendous lesson. What's the lesson? In order to understand this, the Rebbe is going to bring, let's jump This is typical in Hasidus. We talk about one issue and then we jump to something else and then we come back. So the Rebbe is going to jump into some philosophical ideas, very deep ideas. Again, as I said in the introduction, first he's going to mention it in three levels of denying God. That's the first idea. And then the Rebbe is going to mention it in three levels of creatures. And we will see that the frog is one of those three levels. And the level of the frog actually is the same level of the Pharaoh. And that's why Pharaoh needed frogs. And that's when he understood that there's godliness in the world. So let's see. Chapter 4. In the negation, denial, that the nations of the world in those times, denial of godliness, they did, there are in general three levels, one below the other. Level number one, there are those who negate just the unity of God, that God is one and he is in charge of everything, but they still believe in God. They call him, in the language of the Talmud, Elokad Elokaya, the Lord of the Lords. So there are other lords, but this one is on top of everybody. So they don't negate that there's a God. There is a God, but there are other powerful, whatever, things over there. Angels, or put it the name, whatever your name you want to call it. So because they know and they understand that God is the livelihood and the sustenance of everything. They do know this. Automatically, they don't rebel against God, like Balaam in Parshas Balak. Balaam, he said, clearly said, I cannot transgress the mouth of God. Whatever God tells me to say, I will say it. So even though Balaam was trying to go against the will of God, but he understood that God is on top of everything, I cannot transgress God's word. So again, level number one is, I believe in God. But there are other gods also. This is just the Lord of the Lords. There are other lords. That's level number one. Level number two, there are those who recognize the existence of God and they recognize that, as we mentioned before, Elikad Elikaya, God is the Lord of the Lords, but they negate that the sustenance and the creation of every single creature depends on God. No. There are other creators, so to speak. Like Pharaoh. Pharaoh, he said, in a different place in Yechezkel, it's a verse in Yechezkel 29:3, the river, the Nile, the river is mine, and I did myself. I created myself. That means he said that he created and made himself. He did not need God. In other words, this is very important, it's not that they negate that God exists. Yeah, there's a God called whatever he's called, the God of the Jews, whatever name, doesn't matter. But you know what? I'm also a God. I did myself. I don't need this, your God. So it's a different level of negation. There is God, but I'm also God. No problem. And the Rebbe brings in brackets. The recognition that God is the Lord of the Lords is just the idea that they recognize, this second level recognize, that there's a strength, there's a power that is higher and strength more powerful than him. Because Pharaoh, he wasn't a fool, not at all. He was a very philosophical guy, and his arguments with Moshe are philosophical arguments, but, how the Abarbanel explains and so on, but Pharaoh recognized that God of the Jews is like more powerful than me. But I'm also God. It's just a question of power. Who's more powerful? Okay, your God is more powerful than me, but I'm God also. No problem. In very important words of the Rebbe, in this particular case, it's very important to get this idea. Again, there is an existence of a God. Good. I'm also God. And you should know that my existence of God as God does not depend on your God. I'm independent. I do recognize that you have a God and he's a great guy, even more powerful than me, but I'm also God and I don't depend on him. Point. That's opinion number two. And then there's opinion number three. There are those who completely negate the existence of God. There's no such a thing as God. Forget it. Like today we would call them atheists, whatever. Like Sancheiriv. The Rebbe brings up Sancheiriv, who destroyed he didn't get to destroy the first temple, but he destroyed the ten tribes of the Jewish people in the north and so on. I'm not going to teach story now, but the point is that Sancheiriv, he did not believe in God. He insulted and he was like so much against God, and he clearly said and believed there's no such a thing as the Lord of the Lord. Forget it. Your life is in my hands. He didn't say, I'm God. That's not the point. That's Pharaoh. He said, I don't care about God. What do you mean, God? There's no such a thing. I can kill you whenever I want. That's Sancheiriv. So again, this is very important. We have three types of negation of God. Negation number one is, he's the Lord of the Lords, but there are other authorities around. There are others, other powers around. But everything depends on him. But there are other powers. If you pray to this thing, if you pray to that thing, if you whatever, you can get your way. Second one is Pharaoh. There are independent powers in the world. I'm one of them. I don't depend on God. Even though I do not negate God, but I don't depend on God. And then the third one, there's no such a thing as God. Forget it. Hey, fifth chapter. Of these three types of negation of God, even though in a very superficial way we could say that the third one is the worst, the one that says there's no such a thing as God, the truth is that's not the way, that's not correct. The worst is Pharaoh, is the second one. That's the worst. Why? The Rebbe explains like this. And this is interesting because the Rebbe mentioned this same idea when talking about atheists. The Rebbe wasn't so strong against, so to speak, atheists. No problem, let him be atheist. It's okay, he believes in God anyway. Don't worry. Why? So the Rebbe is explaining like this. In the first way of negation of godliness, that people used to call God the Lord of the Lords, like Bilam, that's the example in the nations of the world, ancient nations of the world, they understand how God is the godliness, I'm sorry, the livelihood and the sustenance of everything. And that's why they cannot really go against him. And they actually recognize that there's an existence called God. Okay, so that it's not such a big problem, so to speak. They believe in God. Balaam was also prophet of God. They believed in God. In the third way, the atheist, so to speak, with this same idea that they negate God, the existence of a God, they're showing with that godliness, the Rebbe puts it in parentheses, ongerirt, it touches them. Somehow, godliness, quote unquote, bothers them. It's something that doesn't leave my life in peace. I'm against that. You say God, I say no. If you say God, I could say, I don't care. No, I'm not going to say I don't care. I'm going to say no, you're wrong. So they're fighting against this. Again, in the Yiddish, original Yiddish, ongerirt, you touched me. You're bothering me. And therefore, they look for ways to negate this. And they argue and they this and that. And they say one thing and another thing. And you're wrong. And for this reason and that reason, and blah, blah, blah. And they want to negate the existence of God. Comes out, says the Rebbe, that through their negation and through their being against, that shows that there's something called godliness. That they are against that, but there is godliness that you're against. You're not alone. You say, yeah, there's something called godliness, and I'm against that. They recognized, up to a certain point, there's something called godliness, and they don't like it. And it bothers them, and it touches them, quote unquote, in the words of the Rebbe. That's the third one. But Pharaoh is terrible. Pharaoh said, again, in the words of Yehezkel, the prophet, the river is mine, and I did myself, I created myself. He wants to say that his existence is from himself. I created myself. And through me, there's no mention at all of the true God. I don't need to talk about it. I don't argue. I don't care. It doesn't make a difference in my life. It doesn't touch me. I'm God. You want to say somebody else is God? Something else is God? Mazel tov. Have a nice day. I'm God. That's all he says. You want to say, I'm also God? Okay, I don't care, but I'm God. So I don't care about your God. I'm God. He's not saying I'm the only God. He doesn't care. You have your God, and the other guy has his God. But I'm also God. So I don't care about you. Argument finished. That's it. He's not fighting, in the words of the Rebbe. Because the whole thing that these people used to call God, Elika Delekaya, the God of gods, is not something that has to do with him. I don't care. You have a more powerful God? Very nice. I don't care. This reminds me, I know maybe it's not the best example, but this reminds me, in Argentina there are many, many soccer teams, football teams, many, many, in many categories. You know, you have the top ones and you have the really, really low ones. So when a person is really for some team, even if it's the lowest of the lowest, and they always lose, I don't care. It's my team. You might have the most expensive players and win everything. I don't really care. I love my team. That's all. Argument finished. I'm not arguing. How many games did you win? Zero. How many goals did you? Zero. But it's my team. Bye-bye. Argument finished. This is Pharaoh. The fact that there is a God, a Jewish God, and he's bringing plagues in my land and he's destroying everything, I don't really care. Yet, this only shows that he's more powerful than me. But I'm also God. His existence is, of Pharaoh, in the words of the Rebbe, his existence is Ani Asisini. I created myself. He feels like a completely separated thing from God. Absolutely separate. He doesn't depend on God. He was not created by God. He doesn't care about God. I'm God. Automatically, the existence of God, so to speak, doesn't touch him, doesn't bother him, and has no relationship at all with him. Nothing. These are the three types of negations of God, denials of God, and the worst of all of them is Pharaoh. He doesn't care about your God because he is God. Okay, with this, now the Rebbe is going to explain three types of creatures. What are the three types of creatures? Six. Something similar, and the Rebbe stresses the word similar because it's difficult sometimes to really put everything together. But similar to this, there are three types of creatures in the world. And then we're going to see where the frogs are. Three types of creatures. We know, first the Rebbe gives that like an introduction, quite long, but it's an introduction to the ideas. We know, because our sages say, that everything that God created, he did not create anything in vain. And this, we can understand it in a very simple intellect. You don't have to be so smart. That any activity from God has an objective, a reason. Like just like as a human being, the Rebbe learns from a human being. He doesn't do just because, I don't know, it came out. No, what do you mean? Every single act that a person has, and for instance, an artisan, the Rebbe brings the example of an artisan, when he does a piece of art, every single stroke of the whatever, everything has a reason. Why? You might like it or not, I don't care, but she, whatever, understands why he painted this part yellow. Because it represents blah, 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 whatever it represents. So if a human being, all his, her acts are with an objective, God, how much more so? Of course. Now, what's the objective of every single creature in the whole world? This includes human beings, Jews and non-Jews, animals, plants, what stones, anything. What's the reason of being? Why did God create all this? There's another phrase of our sages.
everything that God created, he did not create it except to give him honor, to reveal godliness. Everything that exists in the world is for the objective of revealing the godliness of God in the world. In the words of the Rebbe, to reveal who is the artisan that actually made this thing, that his strength and his will should be felt throughout the entire creation. That's the reason of being of any single creature in the whole world. Sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't, but this is the combination, so to speak, again, of two phrases over sages. Phrase number one, anything that God did in the world, there's nothing made in vain. Everything has a reason. What's the reason? To reveal godliness. Okay. In a practical way, however, the creation is done in such a way in order for there to be free will for men, in such a way that not always you recognize the reason why something was created. Because if everything would recognize godliness, if everything would in the world would reveal godliness, it wouldn't be possible for us human beings to choose between godliness or not godliness. There's only godliness. Forget it. We would be like angels. We wouldn't rebel, we wouldn't do anything wrong and so on. That's not what God created. That's not what God wanted. He wanted us to choose good over bad. So in order for bad, this is another way of saying the same classical thing, that there's good and bad for us to choose. In the Rebbe over here is saying, look, every single thing in the world is there to reveal godliness. But sometimes this is hidden. In order for you to say, oh, wait a second, maybe there's something that is not godliness. Because you don't see it. You don't see the godliness in that thing. So on this idea of revealing godliness, you have three types of creatures. Our sages, we're going back to the Midrash, our sages brought the idea that sometimes there are things that you don't understand what the usefulness of that thing is. It looks like a useless thing, like again, zvuvim, parushim, mitushim, mosquitoes, and whatever. Apparently, they have no use at all. There's no reason why they should be created. However, they are part of the creation. For sure, some kind of usefulness they have. And we know that God saw everything that he created, it was good, and it was very good. Tov me'od, it was very good. Okay? So they're not in vain. And even those the things that we don't understand, but they're not in vain. And not only they're not in vain, the reason of being is to reveal godliness for the glory of God. Through these creatures, there's a glory of God revealed. That's what our sages bring. But these creatures, as we mentioned before, they don't cause damage. They're just creatures that we say, I don't get it. I don't understand why this such a thing should exist. But whatever, it exists because it somehow reveals the godliness and so on. But comes Rav Acha, and he brings a tremendous novelty. A very, very different idea. Much deeper idea. That even the creatures that we don't see any benefit, apparently. And not only that, they cause damage. God created something that causes damage in the world. Like a snake, like a scorpion. Wow, why would God create such a thing? It looks like a, quote unquote, like a bad thing. It's an evil thing. Why? So Rav Acha says, even those things are part of the creation. Don't think they're not. Don't think they don't have a reason of why. And those things also should reveal the glory of God. Even those things were created to reveal the glory of God. Because the very fact that there's an idea that says something, that these creatures do actually something, even if it's contrary to the benefit of men, that would be like the atheist. The first type of creatures, they don't do anything bad, anything, like it's okay, we don't get it, but that's Bilam. That's the guy that says, look, I believe in God, is very powerful, but I have other powers also. I'm not God, but there are other powers. I'll pray to the angels, I'll pray to the whatever, they're going to save me. And that's Bilam. That's the first type of creature, the mosquitoes and so on. Somehow God's glory gets revealed through them. The second one is the atheist. He's causing like damage. It's against creation. It's against the life of a human being. It bites, it kills, and so on. So even if they look to be giving a message, so to speak, that is against God, contrary to the will of God, however, their existence is not independent. It's not that they became boom, out of nothing, they just get, no. God also created those creatures, and their message is, beware, because there's something that could be against God, like the atheist. Even if he says there's no such a thing as God, he's talking about God. We're good. Thank you. You mentioned like the key word. Ah, you said God? So there is such a thing as God. You see? All right. According to this, in the next chapter, we're going to see the frog. According to this, we can understand that Rav Acha says that God told the prophets, what do you think if you don't do my, if you're not my emissaries, my shlichus, you don't do my mission? I don't have any emissaries. I have a full earth full of things that can do my missions for me. Even the snake, even the scorpion. What is Rav Acha saying over here? With this, we come into stress that even the creatures that cause damage, they were created to give glory to God. Not only that they were not created in vain, they give glory to God. Even through them, there's a revelation of the godliness in the world. Like the atheist that talking about negating God, he's talking about God. All right, thank you. Similar to the revelation of godliness through the prophets. When the guy, like a real prophet, comes and says, God told me to say this and that and blah, blah, blah. So he's revealing God. But he's himself talking. We don't really know if he's just made it up or whatever. His revelation, he's revealing godliness in the world. And the Rebbe explains like this, because in a moment that we see that a person, I don't know exactly which story the Rebbe is referring to, but doesn't really matter. When a person is saved through a snake or through a scorpion from some kind of danger, and in particular, when the snake and the scorpion come to punish the wicked people, then gets revealed that even their existence and even with an existence that negates a utility, so to speak, it doesn't have a toyeles, doesn't look like a useful thing because it's coming to punish, it's coming to kill somebody and so on. Even so, this is a creation that God calls Toiv Me'ot. It's very good. Even this existence was created by God to the point that it's called good because up to a certain point was created and came to be from the source of good and reveals at some point, in some way, the strength of God in that creature. Like that creature doesn't see itself as independent of God. In any case, what the Rebbe is sharing over here is the atheist. That talking of against God, he's talking about God. All right. 7. But there's another type of creature, the frog. That the creation of a frog, it doesn't look like something useful at all. It's not easy to see why the frog was created. It doesn't look like useful at all. It's not recognizable what's the usefulness that a person, a human being, can have out of a frog. But it's also nothing, it's not something that causes damage. So it doesn't reveal godliness and it doesn't cause damage. What is this? I don't know. It's nothing. Whatever. It's a frog. And this is a creature, says the Rebbe, that has no like intellectual content, so to speak, that can bring out how an artisan created it. Like, it doesn't reveal godliness. Again, a creature that helps, is useful, reveals godliness. There's a purpose and so on. A creature that goes against God also reveals some godliness, because the purpose is that we should not choose bad over good and so on. But this creature, I don't know. There's nothing coming out of the frog. No message, so to speak, lesson coming out of a frog. And this is the novelty that Rav Acha brings, even the frog. That the idea that Rav Acha said is, if it wouldn't be for the frog, there would be no way of punishing Pharaoh and the Egyptians. Why? The Rebbe explains like this. How comes revealed that even Pharaoh and the Egyptians, which they consider themselves an existence that does not reveal godliness, and furthermore, it says, I'm the river, and the river is mine, and I did myself, that believes that his existence is from himself. How do you do that this creature, because after all, it's a creature also from God, but he doesn't feel it like that, should know that God is the Lord, I'm God. How do you do that? And furthermore, how can they recognize that their existence is just dependent on God, and their livelihood depends on God, from the source of life, from his essence and so on, and it does not come from himself, because there's no creature in the world, like the Rambam says, that has an existence from himself, and is not created but something else and so on. How can you do that? That's only through the plague of the frogs. So how do you do that, the Pharaoh? How do you accomplish Pharaoh recognizing that he is not God, and that there's a God, and he, Pharaoh, depends on God? How do you do that? Through the frog. Why? Because from amongst all the animals in this world, this is an existence, the frog, is an existence that you cannot recognize at all the usefulness. Why is it there for? We don't know. There's no reason why the frog should be there. There's nothing good that comes from man. And it doesn't have a spiritual or a intellectual content of damaging either. So again, it doesn't do anything good. It doesn't do anything bad. This is Pharaoh that says, I don't care about God. I'm God. I'm independent. So here comes the frog. And the frog is not something useful, and it doesn't cause damage. It's like, there. What do you mean, frogs? Yeah, it's just frogs. They don't do anything. They look like they have no cause, no reason of being, no usefulness, no damages, no nothing. It's just like a neutral, so to speak, creature. And through the frogs, and through the fact that they went in the shlichus, in the mission of God, and furthermore, they sacrificed themselves for this mission, as our sages explained, that they jumped into the ovens and they killed themselves and so on, just to do the mission of God. And from the frogs, later on, many, many years later, by the destruction of the first temple, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, who were three prophets that live in Babylon, they learned from the frog and they jumped into the fire. God saved them, whatever, very nice. But the point is, why did they jump into the fire? Because they learned from the frog. If the frog kills themselves, we, of course. So we see that, after all, they had some usefulness to learn from them. So that's how God, so to speak, punished or charged, whatever, the Egyptians. This plague of frogs was brought to the Egyptians specifically to destroy this impurity of the Egyptians of considering themselves, I exist because of myself. And this was revealed in a way that the Rebbe ends with a verse from Parshas Va'era, Ve'yodu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem, and the Egyptians will know that I'm God. That means through the frogs, God revealed that every single creature, even the frogs, belong to God, and they come from God, and they actually have a reason of being. So again, just this is the end, but going back a little bit, three types of negation of godliness that the ancient nations of the world used to negate God. The one that says, yeah, God is there, but I also have another God. And the one that says, God is there, very nice, but I'm God. And the one that says, I don't believe in God. And the worst of them is the one that says, I'm also God. In the words of the Rebbe, it's a creature. You need a creature that doesn't reveal godliness, nothing, quote unquote, good for the world. And it doesn't cause any damage at all. It's completely neutral. That creature, by doing the mission that God imposed, so to speak, in that creature of going and being a plague for against Egyptians and jumping into the ovens and so on, by that, God showed the Egyptians, you're also my creatures. What do you think? You're independent from me? You're not. Look at this creature. It's completely neutral and, quote unquote, looks independent and still does my mission. You also do my mission. You're there because I created you.